Now I want to welcome into the studio Declan Cahill from the Riverside Drama Group. Good morning, Declan.
Morning, John. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Now I've introduced you as from the Riverside Drama Group, but there's a lot more strings to your bow. You're involved with the drama here in the Near FM.
I am, yeah.
You're involved with the Northside Partnership.
Yes.
And with Skull Katrina. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Declan?
Yeah, I'm a Cork man. You know, we all have our problems in life, don't we?
Yeah, keep taking the medication.
Exactly. I'm here now over 40 years. It's God, the years have gone by so quickly, John. It's incredible.
They do.
Yeah. And we were chatting before the show about children and grandchildren and the years going by and so on.
Yes.
It's extraordinary how the years have gone. I came to Dublin in 1971. To join an organisation called the Institute for Industrial Research and Standards. It's now morphed into, through various changes, into an organisation called Enterprise Ireland.
Yeah.
So I left that. Yeah, it's a sister organisation to the IDEA. So I left the organisation after 40-year service, just before Christmas. So I'm a free agent, so to speak. And I've been involved in drama for many years, and I've got a great satisfaction from it. Both performing and laterally in the production and direction into things. And I love, somebody said to me recently, you know, what the hell, why do you go through the trauma of trying to put a show together? And it is very difficult. And I suppose really to see people who struggle with their parts because, you know, we're normal people. And, you know, developing a character and, you know, making something happen on the stage in a live show, no safety net. You know, you got to get out there and do your thing and blend that into a team of people to perform in a play, to interpret a play written by somebody and to work together. I'm a huge believer in effective teamwork. Yeah, I think you can achieve an awful lot through that rather than individual effort, so to speak.
You're directing this play at a significant seven.
Yeah.
And it must be a great satisfaction to actually seeing it all come together after the rehearsals. And
it can be very painful.
Because,
you know, I mean, a friend of mine, a chap, Peter Pryor, in the drama group here in Near FM, pointed something out to me recently and it really struck in my head. He said that he was at a drama course. And the tutor made a very interesting point. He said that a playwright will write something and hand it to a director who interprets it and then works with a cast and hands it to the cast who in turn will hand it to an audience. So,
so it's been interpreted about three times.
Exactly, and I hadn't really thought of it like that.
It's very interesting.
So, I mean, from a playwright's point of view, a playwright can go to see his or her play three or four different times and they're all different.
Yeah.
Some of them he may not be too happy with, or she might be too happy with. Yeah. And a director's point of view too, you will set off with an image in your head and you will try to achieve that working within the limits of the people that you have in your cast.
Yeah.
And it gives me great satisfaction to try pull something together, especially when people, the talented people sometimes are the most difficult because, you know, some people who are talented don't do maybe the simple things very well. You know, because they do it naturally almost. But the people who struggle and who really work very hard, they're the people I get great satisfaction with because they have to step up to the mark and go a step further.
I know what you mean,
It's like sports people or whatever, you know, people who are very talented. But these guys, these people train and train and train. You know, natural talent will only take you so far.
Yeah.
You know, but as I say...
This is an amateur.
Oh, absolutely.
Completely amateur.
I mean, the cast just give a cross-section. You've a cardiac research nurse. You've got a physiotherapist involved in the show. You've got a local community nurse. You've got a person who works with CRC. You've got an IT trainer. You know, it's amazing. You know, the cross-section of people that brought together. Somebody else works in Irish Rail. You know, it's incredible.
After working hours.
Oh, absolutely,
And how long would our rehearsals go on?
Well, we started in January. So, you know, you're talking about 3 months, two nights a week. And then if you have problems, I mean, unfortunately, in this production, we've had a lot of difficulties. Two of the cast, their mothers were unwell. One is still very bad in hospital at this very moment. And she's, you know, she's doing a fantastic job caring for her mother and yet performing in a play. Sometimes it's a relief, of course.
It could be an outlet for her.
An outlet, but it is difficult. Mm. Another girl, our treasurer, her father died recently. Another girl broke her arm. Her husband had an accident. Another girl cast her daughters in hospital. You know, so we're no different to the community that we are from.
Yeah.
So we've got to overcome those difficulties as everybody else has. You know, but the objective is really to put on a show for people who may not normally go to theatre as such from our community and help them over a period of maybe 2.5 hours maybe to forget their troubles or the problems that they have and enjoy or experience something they may not normally experience.
Yeah.
And that's the objective.
Yeah. I wouldn't be a great theatre goer now myself. Mm. I've been a few times, but I wouldn't be a dedicated theatre goer. Were you always interested in theatre? Did you go to see plays? And
Funnily enough, I was a scout leader before I came to Dublin way back, working with young kids, Cub Scouts, between 8 and 11. And there was a drama element where children had to, you know, perform in a show, and I suppose that's where I got my little interest at the beginning. I suppose somebody said described me one time that was interested in performing, and somebody very caustically or truthfully said, "Don't ask him to open the fridge door, or he'll give you, or he'll give you 10 minutes when the light comes on." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I suppose we're all a bit of show offs, I suppose, really, you know, because what are you doing? You're standing up in front of people, you know, interpreting or trying to do something and make people react, either laugh or cry, or, you know, try to pick up what you're trying to get across. I mean, it's nerve-wracking.
I was just going to say that. I would personally find that nerve-wracking. I had to make speeches at my daughter's weddings, and I was literally shaken.
I mean, that's an interesting point, John, because when you hear people talking about, oh, he's very good at that, you know, speeching or giving a few words or whatever. But you don't know the truth behind it, that person has prepared. I mean, this is the fallacy that people think that, oh, we can talk off the cuff, so to speak. I mean, people who are public speakers, who may be salespeople, politicians, broadcasters or whatever, you know, they will have maybe a set speech, 80% of it they will have off, and then they'll drop in various pieces. So this thing of saying a few words, you know, they're carefully crafted.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the famous, they talk about the ad lib. You know, a good ad lib is well rehearsed, you know.
Markham and Wise, they were fantastic ad libbers, but as you say, they ad libbed at all.
They would never try something unless they rehearsed it.
Yeah.
And they would, you know, the thing that they had, of course, was, I mean, the two elements that always struck me about them was three, I suppose, the material, number one, you know, the writers.
Yeah.
But they rehearsed and craft and honed what they did. And the third thing, of course, they had the thing called timing, you know, which is magic. I mean, not everybody has it.
Yeah.
You know, and delivery, how to, you know, and you're talking about microseconds, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, they were. I mean, but the interesting thing about them is that if you look at their background, you know, how they developed their craft, you know, they hoofed and they did their work, they did their apprenticeship.
Oh, yeah, they done the apprenticeship, as you say, going around it.
And one of the problems in modern life is, in many ways, some of the artists, particularly in the music business, who are overnight successes, literally, you know, they're like stars in the sky, you know, they fly through and they burn out because a lot of them have no background. You know, they haven't, they served their time, basically, you know, in learning the craft. And I think another big issue that we have in our group, John, Riverside Drama Circle, is that we have huge respect for our audiences. And you know, we fuss over them and we respect them and we make sure that when they come that they're going to be looked after from the moment they arrive to the time they leave. And my wife is involved in the front of house end of it for many, many years. She's not a member, but she does a lot of work. And she came up with this great idea a number of years ago that the first thing people do when they come in is they're offered a suite. It's just a small little gesture, but
it makes all the difference.
It just makes a difference.
Settles people down.
It does, and it gives them respect. And also at the end of the show, the cast and crew all, we've dressed in black, we have polo shirts but Riverside Drama Circle on it, so we have a sort of a uniform, so to speak.
Okay.
And we always try to get out to the back of the hall in our blacks to thank people as they leave. small thing, but
yeah,
it's something that
we small things that count.
Well, we can't do this without an audience. It's as simple as that, you know. And it's there's very few hobbies that you expect other people to come along to, you know, to listen to your performer, to watch you, you know.
And hecklers, would you get hecklers? Or
no, not so much in the conventional drama or a play. Yeah. I mean, you might get a guffaw of a laugh or whatever. You'd get that now in pantomime or in a review or a concert or something, you know. But not so much in a play. No, you wouldn't. You might get somebody getting into a fit of uncontrollable laughter. That happens.
That's good. That's, you know, that's like a tonic.
And the other thing is that can happen is that, in a serious part of a play, you know, funnily enough, people can actually laugh because of nervousness. It's a very strange psychological thing. So you have to be very careful.
Are you talking about the cast now? Or
no. The audience. Yeah. You know, some people react with fright, maybe with a titter or something. It's a very strange thing, you know. We've experienced that a few times. Yeah, the cast laughing is a very serious crime. unless, you know, if they're supposed to laugh. But if, you know, some of the famous actors like Maureen Potter and someone in the old days, they would try, the expression for laughing is just corpsing, you know, you can't control yourself. And what they would try to do is they would engineer a situation where they would make the other people laugh. You know, and it takes great art to be able to do that and yet keep their own thing going. But I'm afraid, you know, we wouldn't encourage that at all. Okay. No.
Well, listen, we better talk about the play. The Significant Seven, and it was written by Dennis Bourne. Did you say he's a friend of yours?
Well, he is a friend. Yeah. He's a neighbour, actually. He's from the local area, St. Martin. He's been writing for many, many, many years. A prize-winning author. And I have directed a lot of his shows, a lot of his material, both on stage and here on radio. He's a very quirky look at life, and I love that, you know. I mean, it's not the convention, so to speak. And if you met him, he's a very quiet, unassuming man, but he comes up with these wonderful, zany plots.
Ideas,
This one, The Significant Seven, is all about a group of women who've lost their jobs and have come together and formed a fundraising exercise using, I suppose, let's call it a sex line. now you know why
the small print at the bottom of the flyer.
Not suitable for adult only. And it's a way to raise funds or whatever, and the plot develops and so on. And basically, it's one of them comes up with a plan to set up a bit of a honey trap with a so-called leading banker who was a primary cause for the recession in Ireland.
And the
whole thing evolves. I can't tell you too much about it, it's very, very funny. But beneath the jollity, there's a very hard-hitting commentary on the reasons for our recession. You know, like in all good comedy, there's pathos, you know. And underneath it, there's a very serious message that I think comes out of it. But the primary exercise is comedy. It's for people almost to laugh at our trouble, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
And but as I said, underneath it, underneath that veneer, there's a very hard-hitting message that Dennis can often get across in his writing.
Yeah, and I actually said to you off air that I was looking forward to this conversation, because normally I'm covering the recession and the charities suffering from cutbacks, etc., etc., etc. So it's a very good point you make, to get people in to laugh at our troubles.
I really believe that the best medicine, I mean, it's hard to say that the best medicine is laughter, but I really, really believe it in life in general. People who are happier can have a huge impact, positive impact on other people.
Yeah, it's contagious.
It's contagious. Yeah. And, you know, the old story about it takes more muscles to frown than to smile. And even if you smile at somebody in a shop, you get a reaction. I really believe this thing of the smile is like a stone in the pond, you know, the ripple effect. And the same thing with comedy and laughter. You know, to get people to laugh, and even behind the laughter, I mean, what I want people to do is to come and enjoy the show, but to take something away from it. I want people to leave in a different frame of mind than when they came in.
Yeah.
That could be either through laughter or through the points that the playwright is trying to get across in the play, that maybe they think about something afterwards and say, listen, you know, that I never thought of it like that. You know, if they could maybe make a little change in their life as a result, I mean, fantastic, you know.
Hallelujah.
So
yeah.
if we can act as a medium for that to secure that achievement, it's fantastic. And that's our enjoyment then, that if we can get a message across and we're successful in our own way, in our own modest way, in achieving that, that's our buzz. That's the enjoyment that we get out of it. I mean, I think one of the most wonderful sounds for me as a director, to hear the sense of not necessarily laughter and clapping and so on, but you get this buzz of appreciation, or there's energy in a theatre, in a hall. You know, people watching a play. I'm getting too involved now. But this energy that's created between an audience and a cast is actually magical.
Yeah.
And you see people actually, you know, getting involved in it. That to me is fantastic. You know, that's, as a director, I love it, you know.
Well, I know just by listening to you and looking at you that you thoroughly enjoy what you're doing. And we go on. It's in the St. Bridget's Boys National School in Hoth Road.
And it's after the church. Yeah. You know, the St. Bridget's Church there in the Hoth Road, around the corner from Sibyl Hill.
Yeah, and there'll be assembly hall, sort of.
Yeah, it's a school hall. I mean, it's a basic hall. We've been using it now for a while, and the school has been very, very helpful to us, and we appreciate it an awful lot. So we're on tonight. We're opening tonight at 8 o'clock.
Will that be a bit nerve wracking now, the opening show, or have you had previews or anything?
No, we didn't have previews. Yes, it is nervous. Yeah, but the secret is, you know, if you're not nervous, you know, that's when you really fall flat in your face, you know. So it's to challenge or channel that energy into the right form, into an apprentice performance. If you get so nervous that you can't speak, or you stutter, or you know, you get uptight about it, the secret is to try to get the energy into getting your character out. There's an old adage in theatre that, when you stand on a stage and look out into an audience, there's a glass wall between you and the audience, and you've got to project your character to the audience.
And
if you assume that it's going to be all right, it won't. You know, there's no such thing as it'll be all right on the night. That's nonsense. You'll make it all right on the night. So you got to go out there, and if you're playing a normal character, you can't go out as you are. You've got to be bigger, because the stage tends to diminish you in stature. You know, you've got to get in there and especially if you're playing a part then with a very, say, over the top part, you know, character wise, you've got to really hit that very high, you know. Mm. And you got to hit it at the right, I mean, what's very difficult is one character has to change their character on stage. Now, that's difficult. You know, they got to go from themselves to somebody else. You know, that's difficult, you know.
And you as a director now, you'd be watching from the wings. And if you saw the audience were maybe reacting in a negative sort of way, is there anything you can do?
No,
you're.
It's like, I suppose, really, it's like pushing the boat out. You know, push the craft out, and you hope the crew will perform. I mean, look, you don't know. Every show is different. I mean, one of the biggest problems that people have is that a cast assumes that the play will go the same the second night as the first night. And it's utterly different because the audience is totally different.
Yeah,
and it's incredible to see the differences. And you hear people saying, well, they never laughed at that line. You know, because they're different. They see things differently. You have an audience which is very participative and vocal. You have people who sit and listen and they'll wait for the punchline and, you know, totally different. So the energy levels are different and the atmosphere changes. It's extraordinary, you know.
So there's a lot to it.
There is, and I suppose really I keep coming back to this thing of respecting the audience, that you know, whether you have one person in the audience or you have 100, you've got to give it, you know, your full belt. You've got to get out there and perform regardless who's there, and you must control the audience. The audience must not control you.
Yeah.
And the danger is if the worst audience is one that laughs at everything. You know, literally.
The worst,
because what happens is that that's very contagious, and actors can be sucked into this thing of, oh God, they laughed at that. I'll move my.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So you've got to be truthful to your character and what you rehearse, and do the same. Get out there and do the same thing, and not allow to be sucked in. I mean, applause is a very powerful drug.
Yeah.
And it's a very dangerous one. And if you allow that to get... Because it's insidious, you know. I mean, it's a wonderful feeling to be applauded. But if you allow that to get in, it'll affect your character. So you got to deliver what you rehearsed. The rule of thumb that I always say is, we've rehearsed it, we've discussed it, we've agreed. We've formed the character, you have the costume. Now you go out and do that tonight and tomorrow night and the night after. The same way all the time. Don't change. Now, you might have to tweak it, obviously. You say if there's a lot of laughter, you might have to ride the line and repeat it. That's different now. I'm talking about change in performance. You know, people say, I think I'll do this tomorrow night, you know. And that's very dangerous.
And timing would come in there. If somebody was if the audience were laughing at a line, would you delay your next line?
Well, what you sort of do is you give half the line and repeat the line then again. Mm. You know, because people, you know, must hear you. I mean, back to these rules of thumb, you know, you can be a wonderful actor, but you can't be heard. And it's the most frustrating thing when you can't hear what somebody is saying. It really is very annoying. And also you have people in the audience who maybe have hard of hearing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so you have to respect that also, you know. So you got to make sure that you project out through this glass wall I was talking about. You know, you got to get out there and punch it out. And that can be very difficult if you have two people and maybe an intimate scene or whatever. You know, you won't be speaking softly because you can't be heard, but yet you got to appear as if you're speaking softly, you know.
I know what you mean.
There's a lot in it.
Unfortunately, now we're running out of time. Tickets are available from...
I'll give you a number if you like. Yeah, yeah. It's a local number here. 847-6807. 847-6807. Tickets are €10. If you are unemployed or a senior or a student, it's €8. So you can ring and book a ticket, or indeed you can turn up at the hall and pay at the door. So okay. We'd love to see people. It's as I say, we're from the community. We'll be 40 years in existence next October. So we've been around a long time. So it's a success story.
Congratulations, it is a success
story. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. I mean, we'll be celebrating something in October to mark the occasion, yeah.
And it's on tonight and tomorrow night and Friday.
That's it?
At 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Bridges
sharp,
International School. Listen, Declan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
I enjoyed it, John.
And, you know, keep in touch the next time you have a play going on.
Great stuff.
Come into the studio again.
You're very good. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you very much.